Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really exciting today. We have two co-founders with us, Shaju Puthasuri and Deepak Ramaswamy, co-founders of Lightspun. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christian. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I think you guys get the distinction here of being the first time that we've had both co-founders on the podcast, which is kind of crazy considering we're coming up on 190 episodes. So I admit I'm really looking forward to seeing how our conversation goes.
That's cool.
But with that, let's start with Lightspun. Would love to learn more about the company and the problem that it's solving in the market.
Thanks, Kristen, for having us on this show. We are super excited. Lightspun. We have built, as a startup company, the core operating system for insurance, dentists, in order to operate their daily operations. And our friend has been AI, so we work with AI. So we co-work with AI to bring efficiency, speed, best experience for patients, best experience for providers. Think about a young mom taking a child to the dentist, doing a root canal or a crown in the mouth. That experience, we want them to have the best experience, and our platform really enables that. So we are super excited about the value, the innovation that we bring to our stakeholders.
Fantastic. And for context, can you walk us through a use case of how the parent and their child benefits from the platform?
Yeah. So when a young mom goes to the dentist, the dentist performs a crown and she waits for days or months. Suddenly she gets a surprise bill in the mail. She has to pay for it. So there's lack of transparency, how much she owes, what the insurance company pays for that. Also for the dentist, until that procedure is done, he or she does not have the visibility of how much the coverage is going to be. So in order to have that full transparency of the payment, the procedures, takes months, takes weeks. So our platform makes it more real time. Before you go to the dentist, you know what is covered, what procedure is going to be done. The dentist knows exactly how much he or she will get paid from an insurance carrier. So the current, if I were to give you a little bit of a context, I'm sure you have gone to the dentist, I have gone to the dentist, similar experience. The platform that is built is in 80s, 90s, takes a lot more coordination. So what Lightspun has done is we were fortunate to build the core platform from the scratch. We built a new infrastructure. And we were also lucky that while we started to build, we had the AI as our foundation. So we have built this flexible system to bring transparency to healthcare. And in turn, you know, save a lot of money. If you think about every dollar that you spend today, around 20 cents is spent on administration, which means only 80 cents goes to the care. That produces a good outcome. So our goal is to reduce that 20 cents to maybe 5 cents, 3 cents, using technology, using innovation, using AI.
No, it makes good sense. And has the focus been so far or out of the gates on dental?
Yes, we want to crawl first before you run. So we are tightly focused on dental, vision, the ancillary market.
Okay.
We intend to really expand into the other core healthcare areas.
And what drove the decision to start on those two segments first?
I have been in this industry over 20 years. I started my career in dental as a coder, as a programmer. Then I had the fortune of working with the stakeholders, which is within the insurance company, the providers, the patients, the members. And during that experience, I have lived through the inefficiencies. I've experienced how, you know, systems works and takes longer time. And I was fortunate to work with Deepak. He was co-founder at Overjet, and we had the fortune of working the next generation of systems, specifically for clinical AI, where we really realized there's a lot more opportunities in this healthcare verticals. And we came together and said, gee, there is more opportunities here for us to solve the problem. That inspired us, and we said, let's focus on daily usability, efficiencies. Mm-hmm. So that's when we started in 2022, Lightspark. And that triggered us that there is a real opportunity here for us to bring value to the healthcare industry.
Fantastic.
If I can add there, right? So I'm not a dentist by training, but through the process of osmosis and working with experts, I've, you know, also gotten accustomed and exposed to the ways this industry works. And one of the things we realized when we started Lightspun was, you know, dental in general is always a couple of years behind regular mainstream healthcare, medical, and this tremendous opportunity to ultimately, you know, make our customers more successful, more efficient, and have those savings pass on to the patients, to the end customers, if you really think about it. So I would say it's been a lot of it has been motivated by our own personal experience working in this domain for some time, but also discovering as we talk to customers where those opportunities are.
Fantastic. And so if you can walk us through, how has the company's go-to-market strategy evolved over the last 4 years?
That's fantastic. We had to think about, we are building a platform, right? Mm-hmm. And within the platform, we have lots of products. And we are a tiny startup with limited budget capital. So as co-founders, both Deepak and I had to really focus on where the needs of the clients were or our end stakeholders were. So as we built this platform piece by piece, we focused on some difficult areas. You know, how do we explain benefits to a patient or to a provider? Mm-hmm. As we were working on it, we had to iterate, which means we understood the problem of efficiency, the problem of faster payment, faster adjudication, meaning, you know, taking the claim and determining how much the patient needs to pay, how much an insurer will pay a provider or a dentist. As we went through with the platform, we listened to a lot of our payers. Even though we were solving a problem, we have to fine tune. And we used a lot, you know, initially we started in 2022 with native AI models. Deepak will speak a lot more about it. As the technology changed faster and faster, we had to iterate the modules of the platform. So the platform is like the core operating system. Think of a Windows or an Apple operating system. You have the mouse, you know, the navigation, the folders, the files, the video, the audio. So we have a lot more modules built on it, and we had to build it faster. We had to build it quicker with limited resources. So we iterated faster iteration cycle, created us to create a platform rather than a point solution. And what we ended up was consolidating all this point solution, meaning, you know, every company, a $1 billion company, large enterprise, buys different system, like a financial system, claim processing system, patient onboarding system, provider onboarding system. We were able to aggregate or consolidate all these singular third-party system into one product. And we have been very successful because we put one, so we used a land and expand strategy. We go to a client, make sure the first modules work correctly, delivers value. That experience guided us to develop and implement more and more modules to a larger enterprise operating system.
So were you, as part of the strategy, were you selling directly to the payers?
Yeah, they are our primary consumers of our platform. So too, we have for dental practices, there's a product called credentialing. That's a process of verifying a dentist is a real dentist, going to 11 to 12 sites and verifying dentist degrees, dentist education, work experience, and so on and so forth.
And this is, and has that become a module now that you referenced in the bigger platform?
Yeah, it's a module, and we are very proud. We have ADA, which is American Dental Association, mm-hmm. which every dentist in United, almost every dentist in the United States is part of that. And we were able to get that larger, close to 200,000 dentists visibility as a part of the platform. And that took us, really earned us a lot of trust. And the core problem of credentialing or onboarding a new dentist after a graduation or getting that dentist to a payer's network took 60 to 120 days. We were able to do within a few days because of the automation and AI co-working on our platform.
It makes good sense. So, you know, when I think about health tech generally, for people who are not familiar with the vertical, I don't think they necessarily appreciate how long the sales cycles are, especially when you start selling to payers versus consumers. But I've also always said that if you can get started by compliance, managing to compliance or regulations, it's a great start because people have to do it. So was credentialing the first module, or if it wasn't, like how did you think through this is how I'm going to penetrate the market?
I'm going to ask Deepak to comment on because the compliance piece, the security piece, was not an afterthought. That was a foundation that we have to do because of our experiences in the industry. And we concentrated on day one. And we are very proud that we have all the certifications. Deepak can attest to that, and he leads that effort.
Yeah, Kristen, that was a really astute question, you know, and the answer is yes. As you know, these are very, you know, highly regulated industries, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just going back to your earlier question also, you know, in terms of our product discovery, you know, some of the things, you know, we will think, okay, these are well-solved problems. But when you actually dig into these enterprises, you'll say, that's not really a solved problem. Or maybe it's optimized for medical or healthcare, but not really for dental. So, you know, that process of discovery gives us a lot of insight into what we need to build, right? So the answer is yes. You start off with something which is, you know, given the sales cycle, something that our customers can, you know, consume pretty rapidly. It's a burning problem for them, and regulatory thing, you know, compliance is a huge, huge issue for them. We actually started off, one of our first products was actually a simple AI-based model to convert, you know, paper forms into digital records. Very simple, but really tuned for this industry. But that was a very successful thing because it is a burning problem. It was causing a lot of pain to our customers and, you know, delayed payments to providers and therefore delayed benefits for patients as well. So we started there. And then, you know, as we uncovered, you know, compliance was definitely, I mean, we have done many compliance implementations before, you know, HITRUST, SOC 2, you know, all of those HIPAA-related regulations. But it became very apparent that, you know, these insurance companies have to deal with governments, have to deal with third parties where they have to show evidence that they're being compliant. So we build modules to kind of support that. So to answer your question, it's really taking one of those burning pain points of our customers, which is not maybe subject to the long sales cycles, and then you know, building a solution for them and then expanding.
I mean, I think it's smart.
Yeah.
I mean, most, you know, for people who haven't started a company before, you know, you have a finite runway. And so by consequence, unless you're going to be consistently fundraising, you got to close deals.
Yeah.
And in an industry as slow moving as healthcare, you know, being able to figure out a solution that can rack up some wins quickly is great. So, okay. So I understand. So you've been referencing incorporating artificial intelligence in the platform. Can you give us a little bit more color of exactly how you're leveraging the technology and if it's appropriate, you know, how you see this evolving?
Sure, Christian. That's part of our DNA, I would say, because our first model, as I alluded to, was converting, you know, paper documents into digital formats, right? It sounds simple. And it's not something where you would go and get one of the, you know, powerful off-the-shelf models, because end of the day, your models have to be compliant. They cannot, they have to handle patient health information data appropriately, right? And also not give a false positive. You wouldn't want a model to decide, I want to pay this provider or this dentist this amount when they actually did not perform the procedure. So you have to build in all those guardrails. So our approach always has been centered around two things. One is that we have to adhere to regulations and compliance. There are standards in this industry. Sometimes our customers will say, you have to build models that have to fall under certain specifications. So that has always been a first-class, you know, principle when developing the system. The second thing was because you know, there's some models which can you can automate and there's a low risk, and there are a few of those models. For example, when you're converting some documents into a digital format, which don't really have a significant impact if you get it wrong, you can actually automate it with high degree of confidence all the ways. But things like, you know, building you know, billing or deciding to make a decision for on for a provider, those is always require a human in the loop, right? So the AI can take you maybe 95% of the way there, but this 5% has to come from human basically agreeing. And that's very important for compliance too, because the insurance companies have to maintain records, the DSOs or dental organizations have to maintain records. So when we first started out, you know, our models were your plain vanilla, you know, transformer-based models 4 years ago, 3 years ago. And I would say fast forward right now, we have a mix of agents. We're very that those are used quite heavily in our platform, not only internally by us, but also by our customers. And also your, you know, LLM-based models, which are really tuned our domain. These models speak insurance, these models speak dental. So it's that's been an approach. And the landscape changes quite rapidly, as you can imagine, right? But we find that if you adhere to those two principles, where we cannot do the wrong thing, make the wrong decision, and have enough safeguards and guardrails, we are able to navigate sort of the fast-changing landscape.
Makes good sense if we can unpack that. So when I think about code development, I think about deterministic and now non-deterministic problems. And you know, deterministic being, hey, I have a high degree that I can figure out what the outcome should be. And non-deterministic being, I want to leverage a model. Because I needed to make decisions depending on the circumstance. When you set out building Lightspun, did you have an expectation of what percentage of the code base was going to be deterministic versus leveraging a model? And if
Yeah,
so, were you, did it play out to your expectations? And if not, what happened?
yeah, I would say we definitely had a plan and roadmap for deterministic versus non-deterministic. And to answer your second question, no, it did not play out the way we wanted, but it played out differently, and I'll elaborate on that. So I'll give you a simple example. Like when you process a claim, those are deterministic rules, right? You say, you know, I'm doing this procedure, do I pay yes or no, right? This, you can imagine that as a tree, and it's fundamentally a deterministic process. But when you go back to the problem of credentialing, the charge you was talking about, Christian, you know, we go to this 15 different sources. Wait a minute, I have these data points from these 15 different sources. How do I reconcile them? Now, sometimes you can use deterministic algorithms, but sometimes you have to, you know, use AI. You know, is this more recent record? Has there been more recent update? You have to use some, you know, something beyond deterministic algorithms to help identify or narrow down the record. So that was when we started out, right? But as things evolve, you know, especially with the advent of agents, I would say it's not just about you know, those deterministic rules, but how do you select which deterministic rules apply, right? So, for example, this patient just came in, they had an emergency. Oh, wait a minute, maybe I need to treat it differently, and this may not be in my operating rule book, right? So then you have to give them an opportunity to make a higher level decision, which in turn may use deterministic rule sets, but that with a sufficient guardrails is what you need to account for. Or if some doctor sends an insurance claim and they said, wait a minute, this patient has an insurance also from this organization, right? For example, coordination of benefits, then some of those rules cannot be codified deterministically. You have to make high level decisions. And that's where the advent of agents has been very helpful, is to manage this deterministic rule sets in addition to also dealing with inherently non-deterministic problems. So it's still evolving, but that's typically how we are viewed and where we've been successful in our product.
And is it fair to say that you've given the opportunity just to focus on deterministic code base, you've gravitated towards that in order to minimize your compute?
Yeah, for sure, right? And we are very compute aware, aware of the token spends that we have, right? But it's also not only from a financial point of view, but also from a compliance point of view. We have to make decisions, or wherever we use AI, it has to be explainable to our clients. And even if I put a human in the loop, they have to make sense of it, right? If I make it too complicated, then it's difficult for them to make a decision. So our platform is designed for simplicity, but I would say those two vectors are, I would say, the driving factors for us.
And then because you're dealing with PHI, have you landed on local models?
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of local models and also models where we have the BA agreements with our vendors, where they can guarantee our data doesn't leave a certain region or will not be used for training. If you can get those guarantees, we'll leverage them, but it's also been a combination of some of the local models, which have, in recent years have become really good as well for us.
Great. It's great to hear. I remember back in the day when cloud started becoming more prominent, and you'd have to ask them, to enter into a BA, a business associate agreement, BAA, and at the beginning they were like, what are you talking about?
that's been our experience, but now they've been more amenable from my experience.
That's great. And then, so, we talk about human in the loop. And so, I think there's two big things here to talk about: context, but also memory. And let's start with context. And so are you, from where I sit, our firm has a big emphasis on accounting, that my sense is that we are still very far away from making this a total automated process. Not only drift, but just because there are exceptions and you need someone to make a decision. Is it fair to say that that's the case with claims processing management as well?
Yeah, I would say you have to have that skeptical view, and you have to, I think that's fair to say. It has to be targeted, Christian, and with sufficient context. And end of the day, our product has evolved where the human has to make the right decisions for the bigger things, but we have to help, give the right context and the right sort of insights that sometimes only the AI can do. For example, if you're processing a claim and you have 10 years of data, right, to summarize this for somebody who's looking at a claim, an AI can probably do a better job, right? But you also have to give the tools to kind of say, wait a minute, I'm not confident about that. And then, provide a way for them to handle exceptions as well.
Yeah, if I may say, Christian, as a startup company, our culture has been AI focused. Our clients, we lead the clients AI focused, but the center of AI is humans. It is co-working with humans. You cannot replace humans. Even if the humans can upskill their skills with the use of AI, interpretation of AI, even when we do hiring, You're looking for that talent who can hire with AI. I work every day with AI, my emails, my documents, summarization, but with my critical mind. You know, those are tooling that help me to be more productive and efficient. In fact, everyone knows that AI will give us more productivity. But the humanness of AI is where the humans come in. AI gives me imagination, right? Like solving a problem, which I could not have thought about it without the help of AI, right? But that creativity, that next generation of innovation is initiated. So co-working with the AI is a very critical theme. Even our end stakeholders, the product that we automate, we won't do away with the humans. We work together, right? And the humans to drift more towards AI and AI, you know, that's the story that we feel as we implement a lot of these products.
I agree with your assessment. I think the SaaSpocalypse is overblown. I think of AI now as a tool, the same as Excel. In the hands of the person who knows how to use it, it's very powerful and it can amplify your productivity. And so, especially for people who are either earlier in their career or considering a pivot or frankly, just remaining relevant, I don't know how anyone doesn't carve out time to become proficient and understand the true power of what the technology is capable of. I'm curious, without revealing any trade secrets, how is Lightspun dealing with memory? Specifically, you know, I find that depending on the model that I'm working in, I may have to constantly remind the software that I'm using of what we've talked about in the past. And despite my efforts to say, hey, commit this to memory, it doesn't always.
It's a great question, Christian. And the short answer is it depends, right? And it's somewhere where we do compress from time to time, interactions with the AI. Let's say a user has been having to form which is adequate for them. For example, if they've already made a discovery about, let's say, a credential record, then that final output is what we store. And we are fortunate we have some applications and we don't have to worry about memory. How did we actually get there, right? But some cases we will actually do some amount of compression, but the advantage we have being sort of in this domain and know this domain pretty well is we kind of know what things matter for our users, right? Our users will care about, if it's like, let's say you're onboarding a provider, they care about effective dates, dates and termination dates, certain types of licenses. So we will track those business relevant values and not like everything. So we'll have some kind of filtering process. It's a little vague, but it really depends on the type of model that we're building and where it needs, it can be kind of stateless a little bit. And then some places where it actually needs to have some state, but only the relevant state. And we'll just track those relevant states.
So it sounds like you're just leveraging your domain expertise to know what is the most valuable components that need to be stored or accessible in order to deliver on the solution.
Absolutely, Christian, right? But not only our expertise, but we also talk to our customers. So a lot of the agents are developed with that feedback. Basically, we look at how are they running their company or how are they actually working? What can we do to make their lives easier, right? So it's really a combination of what we bring to the table and also understanding how are they actually using it. And it's not just one customer because we don't never want to overfit to one particular customer, but it's really talking to a number of customers and saying, okay, they have the same problem. They rely on the same variables, if you will. And, let's design it that way, right? So it's a combination of both, I would say.
How does the platform evolve? Where do you see it going?
Chaju, do you want to take that?
Yes. It's interesting you asked us 4 years ago, how did we start the product? Even though we build the core platform, we are always innovating. For example, just imagine you go to a coffee shop and you purchased a cup of coffee and you want to pay for it, you swipe your credit card, and that is done in 2 seconds. Think about you go to the dentist, he or she performs that procedures, and they get paid probably 7 to 30 days. There's a lag. Just imagine that. That's how we are evolving right now. We have a wonderful partner, Nations Benefits. We partner with them. We are actually built the entire backend platform just to have that experience, especially in the Medicare Advantage field. The elderly population going to the dentist, they have a card. That card contains your identity. That card contains the dollars, your benefits. Get your procedures done. Tap that card in real time. The money is taken from the card and get to pay to the dentist. That's the experience. That's the evolution that we are doing. We're super excited, which means we are evolving continuously. The reason we are able to do, we have a core foundation really laid down really well, all decoupled for communications, real time. We are able to process a claim real time, pay a claim real time through fintech. So that's the type of innovation that we are working and really bringing to the marketplace. And that's what we are super excited about.
I think that is a great real-world example of how a startup can I don't know, pivot's not the right word, but at least start in one vertical and expand into a second. Because who doesn't love payment engines? No, but it's super smart because if you think about it, you start with established demand. Someone needs credentialing, and then you do a phenomenal job. You build a relationship and trust, and now you, next thing you know, you can start solving other problems. And it doesn't have to necessarily be in the immediate vertical. It can be tangential. It's great. I would love to know more about your personal careers. How did you guys meet? Where'd you start? How'd you meet? How did this evolve and get you to start Lightspun?
I'll go first. Yeah, I came to this country 30 years ago as an immigrant. I studied physics in Boston College as a graduate student. Started off as a coder, as a programmer, moved into business, learned everything by doing it like a founder, iterate, curious, always solve the problem by doing it. Now we can do it faster through AI, so we can get more acceleration. So curiosity, hard work, solving problems. I worked for some of the large payers like DynaQuest. That gave me how big corporations work, how they make decisions, how they operate. Being part of a startup, Overjet, that's where I met Deepak. And we worked great together. We were able to solve problem again, focused on solving problem. Deep admiration for Deepak with his technical expertise. And we brought the business and technology together. One of the reasons we have been able to grow so fast, as co-founders, we are able to collaborate. We converse every day. How do we solve problems? That's what we live and breathe every day. How do we get the right team? Do we have the right product? Obviously, we have wonderful investors who support us. So bringing an employee, good culture, culture of innovation, speed, velocity, clarity. As founders, we are driven every day, of our age and generation. So that's our story together. And we look for a future to grow this company bigger and bigger.
What inspired you to come to the States?
I came for a graduate, to do a graduate studies.
Fantastic. And how, just out of curiosity, how'd you end up in Boston?
The wonderful city of Boston, mecca of education. That was one of my choice to do physics and hard science. In fact, doing hard science taught me also problem solving, if you really think about as a physics major, how do you make decisions? It's a wonderful subject that makes you a great leader, founder. And I'm always happy that I chose that path.
I think that's great. I mean, It's not as often, but I've found myself in conversations before where you say, "Oh, I don't have a business degree. So what do I, why can I start a company?" And I was like, "Well, you can have an engineering degree, physics degree, take your pick." I mean, really, this is about problem solving and critical thinking on a daily basis. So the domain prepares you well. Deepak, what about yourself?
Yeah, so Christian, when I so I actually my training, professional training, was as a computational scientist. So I got my PhD in computational science, and my first job was as a startup. I was building software to design your electrical circuits, your chips on your phones, so building that sort of software. Over the years, I have worked as a quantitative engineer at buy side, sell side finance. I have worked as as a product manager. I've also worked in Amazon. So I've done various stints, but for me, the constant thread in all of these was sort of a job with a computational or a quantitative flavor, if you will, right? And so at the previous role, and including this one, it's for me, how do I use technology and quantitative science to help solve problems? So that's always been my, sort of my goal. I had the good fortune of connecting with Shaju about 8 years ago. There was a very specific problem I was looking to solve, and the specific problem was I need a Boston area exec who knows insurance, right? And then connected with Shaju. He seemed to be the only one on LinkedIn that showed up. And I connected with him, and and then we worked very well together. And then when we started Lightspun, we discovered there are a lot of problems we could solve, leveraging our domain experience. And so for me, the journey has been towards solving problems, especially with some sort of a quantitative or an AI flavor, right? One last bit, I started off in computational science, which is a very particular mathematical, applied maths sort of area. But even that area has undergone such a revolution because of AI, right? So the domains are changing, and you're really, the training that I found that helps you is the problem solving skills. If you can solve problem, apply critical thinking to your earlier point, Christian, you the your training that you went to school for should not limit you in the actual domain that you end up working in.
I agree. I mean, I these days I think about, what's your playbook or heuristic that you use to solve a problem? And a lot of times I think the ability to do that is just to condition ourselves to just be able to identify, in effect, break things down, identify their root cause issue, and then just be persistent and determined as well. I would love to know the dynamic between the two of you. We've had a lot of solo founders on here. We've had a bunch of co-founders, but usually it's only one. But now that I've got you both, how, the dynamic, you guys seem to have a great working exchange. What can you share with the audience in terms of, how do you divide responsibilities when you do have a disagreement? How do you resolve it? Anything that you can help us better understand why you guys are having the success that you are?
So maybe I'll go first, Shaju. So Shaju's job is a job of a CEO, right? My job here is of a CTO. But really, it's broken down. The sort of division of labor is broken down around functional areas. So I covers all things tech, security. Shaju does business, but he's also a product expert. And then I mentioned through osmosis, I picked up a lot of things, and Shaju has been a tech executive also before, so we definitely interact and contribute greatly in sort of a lot of areas of overlap. So I would say these are mostly guidelines. It's not to say you can't really do this or I can't really do that. Why? But it's really where we have gravitated towards. But we seek out each other's counsel and advice and sort of expertise on areas where I know Shaju is great. He's run big teams before, tech teams before. And I have learned a little bit about the product before from him. So that's also been very helpful. That's my perspective. I don't know, Shaju, how you feel about that.
Sure, I will say both Deepak and I collaborate very closely. When we have disagreements, when we differ on opinions, we seek secondary data points, and always we put the client in the center. What is best for the client? If it's a client problem, if it's a product problem, can we make it faster, cheaper? And we make decisions around the product. What is this the right product? Are we making the right decision on the cost, the development path? Do you really need this product for the client right now in terms of prioritization when we have limited resources and talents? And third, if it's an employee problem, what's the best for the employee, right? So to bring that humanness, because we run this business just like we collaborate, we want all the employees to have that same spirit. Are we hard? Yes, sometimes we are hard, right? But employee-centric, customer-centric, and I always learned that, Deepak, you know, we agree to disagree, right? But that's for to make the best decision, right? And then we also have our own leadership team that corroborates or collaborate to a perspective that we bring. And this happens rapidly. And that's the advice I'll give to the other founders. We don't wait for days and months. Within a few hours, we can come to a decision. So rapid decision-making, not always we get it right. We get quite sometimes wrong, but we learn from that. We reflect, gee, why did this employee leave? Or why did we make this bad decision? How can we course correct? It's a continuous learning. I would say that's how we build good culture, good growth, through the rapid feedback, rapid decisioning, around the customer and employees.
So said another way, it sounds like the two of you, whether said or unsaid, have a core set of principles that you agree upon. You use that to operate. If the vendor is ever a question, you discuss, and then, hey, you know, no one has perfect information. So let's just make a decision. And then if we find out we're wrong, we're going to resolve it. Fair?
That's very succinctly put, Christian.
All right. No, I think it's great. And, you know, on the surface, you know, it sounds really intuitive, but, you know, I sometimes hearing other co-founder stories, you get the sense that, you know, they don't set that understanding up front. And maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, regardless, I think it makes good sense to at least have that conversation when things are going well or in the beginning, so that.
You have to put across egos, be humble. I know it's a fast moving startup culture, startup, you know, you grow the product. Money will come if you do the right thing, right? So you have to focus on right thing, right product, right customer, right employee, right culture. And it's not easy. It's iterative.
Did you always know that was the case? Or was there ever something that ever happened to you where you had a moment where you're like, oh, I now see this clearly?
We learned. Let me put it that way.
No, it's great. Yeah, I think it's great to hear you say that as well, because sometimes I think people hold off on getting started because they want to know the answers to everything and not appreciating. You just can't. It's not conceivable. There's too much to know. But also, if your heart's in the right place and you're focused on generating great outcomes, you're right. Money's just a way of keeping score. You need it to keep the business going. But I definitely think there's fundamental laws at work about being, you know, operating with integrity and seeing what you can do best for your clients, all the while, you know, making sure your business is at least break even, if not profitable. So good stuff. I've genuinely enjoyed this. Before we wrap up, if there's anyone who wants to learn more about Lightspun, is interested in joining the team, how can they find you?
www.lightspun.com. Also, drop us an email. It's also on the website. We love to have more talent to our team, the right talent. It's always tough to get the right talent, even though there's a lot of resources out there. We're always looking for people who are driven, fast learners, doesn't matter where they come from, what type of degrees they have, curious, iterative, who wants to be part of that fast growing company.
I love
so,
it. Great. Well, with that, Deepak Jaju, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. This was fantastic. Thank you. Look forward to seeing and hearing more about your success.
Christian,
thank you for
thank you
having
for
us.
My pleasure. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.